Hey, and welcome to this episode of Her Music Academia, the podcast. I am your host, Lydia Bangura. On this show, I talk all about music, I talk about my own experiences in music research and in performance, and I have guests on to talk about what they do in music. We talk about music performance, production, music education, music research, and I'm using this show to document my time as a PhD student at the University of Michigan studying music theory. In this episode, we are continuing our Black History Month extravaganza. We have my good friend, Darian Durrell, otherwise known as 94 Durrell. We talk about his experiences in rap and hip hop, his songwriting process, production process, who he collaborates with. We talk about rap and hip hop research in the academy. And we talk all about the show that he co-hosts on Instagram called The Dope or Nope Show. This is a show that he co-hosts with his friends where they critique and provide feedback to up-and-coming rappers. It's truly a fascinating endeavor. Without further ado, here's our conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. We've got a whole lineup happening for Black History Month, which I'm really excited about. So I'm really pleased to introduce our next guest, who is Darian 94 Durrell Durrell. Darian, how are you?
I'm doing good, Lydia. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm really excited that we could work it out. Let's jump right into it and start off by talking about your musical background. So your early music experiences, like if you grew up in a musical family, like are there people in your family that are musicians and, you know, the stuff that you were listening to as a kid?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, musical family and I think regards to like musicianship, I wouldn't say, but music's been a big part of my family since I was young. My dad played a lot of like funk and like psychedelic music when we were earlier. So that got me like really introduced to like sampling, old hip hop records, those kinds of things. But I didn't necessarily start doing music for real until I was about 10 or 11. Unbeknownst to me and my brothers, like, you know, we have an uncle, long lost uncle that is a musician. He composed, could play like, you know, multiple instruments. He was extremely talented before, my family lost contact with him. And outside of that, that kind of like leaked back into our lineage. Weirdly enough, my mom and dad aren't like musical folks in terms of like skill. But that kind of like leaked back into, to that with me and my brothers, who are my oldest brother, Trey, who when he was still rapping, he went by Manic. And then my brother Devin, who, you know, very, very, very clever name, Divino.
Shout out to Devin.
Shout out to Devin, you know what I'm saying? They were like some of the first, the first folks to introduce me to even being able to like rap or compose music in that capacity. So, but really it came from a lot of influence and like tutelage, I'd say, came from my brother Trey.
Mm-hmm. And so what were you primarily listening to like as a kid and as like a teen?
Oh, as a kid, I would have to, a lot of Ludacris.
Let's go, Luda.
I know, right? People don't be giving Luda his flowers. I remember, it's so funny because when I was, I want to say I had to be in second or third grade, and I think Chicken and Beer had just came out. Georgia. Yeah, I know, right? It's a flashback.
Also, and, I'm sorry to interrupt. Will you tell the listeners where you're from?
Oh, that's tough. All right. So I'm also a military kid, so I popped around a lot. But traditionally, or I guess originally, Mississippi via Columbus, Mississippi, and then like Augusta, Georgia were like my first like starting points. Okay. But yeah, it was, I still remember this moment to this day where I was with my mom in our van, and we're driving, I think, to the commissary. It's basically like a grocery store. And I'm sitting rapping Friday by Ludacris in her car. from the beginning to the end. And the one thing she told me was like, that's crazy. You remember all those words and flows and cadences, but you can't pass your English test for nothing.
Damn, mom. Not my own mom correct. Reading me. No.
Yeah, no, right? She was very correct. Very correct. But when I look back, I think even then, it's like I had this draw towards this art that I knew nothing about. So yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Okay.
And so with Chris being one, I think outside of that, maybe 50 Cent, but yeah, that was pretty much the folks that I listened to when I was younger.
Okay. So then you said that you started formally making music around like 10 or 11. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So my, we moved out to California around that age. My brother, Trey, he was getting heavy into like the music scene out in Monterey, California, doing a lot of like rap battles and freestyle events. He was even on the radio one time freestyling. He was like freestyling for like, I don't know, felt like ever, maybe like 10, 15 minutes. He was just going. And I remember I heard that. And as you know, little young brother, I was like, yo, that's so cool. I want to do that. I want to hang with my big brother. And the way for me to do that was learn how to do music. So my brother Trey, he could make, and he still does, and he can make beats. So that was one thing that, you know, I would always try to hang around, but he would never really like let me rap on his beats because at that time it was very, very bad, very, very bad. But really that's when I started to learn how to put together songs, because my brothers were extremely harsh with me in terms of like how I would rap, do my flows, my cadences, my entendres, and my storytelling when I was younger, around like 10 or 11, which I have no world experience. So I'm rapping about very simple things,
right.
but they were able to very, very quickly and thoroughly like get out a lot of like whack shit that I was doing and be able to like, you know, teach me the proper ways or like the effective ways to give me like a solid foundation of what rapping should be. And then I could like create my own avenues outside of that. So I got that at a really young age.
Okay. See, this is so fascinating to me because like it's so different from my own experience being in like really formalized music training settings where it's like you have a lesson, you have a teacher, you know, you go to school for it. And so like, you know, you're getting all this feedback in like these quote unquote professional settings versus like something that's like homegrown and like happening in your family and in your community. It's just like that's so different. You know, I couldn't go to like my mom or my cousin and have them teach me to play violin, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they could if they play, but you know what I mean? It's so like standardized.
I know exactly what you mean. It's so interesting of a conversation because like one of my favorite rappers ever is Lupe Fiasco.
Oh, he's sure.
Extremely intelligent. And he's teaching the class that he's teaching at MIT, like the title of it, but he's basically teaching like rap 101 at MIT now, and he's a professor up there. So but one of the first things he was talking about in his first class session was just basically how things are standardized for you know, singers, opera, musicianship, but rap, this $1 trillion industry, even like rappers, a lot of times will tell you like, I mean, I'm rapping, but I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't really have a knowledge. I can tell you what a flow sounds like. I can tell you but why did I pick this word? Why did I do this thing instead of go down this route? We really have no like standardized way to like get to a field. It's just, I was rapping at a lunch table and somebody was beating on the table and then somebody said I was good at it. So I kept doing it. And then now I'm here on, you know, on your podcast. So it's really just how it is with rappers. It's so interesting. It really is.
That is interesting because then it also brings to mind, like, who do you go to ask for help, right? Who are your mentors in that space? Like, you know, it's kind of fortunate, right, that you had people in your family, like in your immediate family and your immediate space that were doing it and that were more experienced than you and that were helping you throughout that process. But it's like, if you're just like a lone kid, especially if you're living in maybe a less diverse city, right, you're out in the suburbs or the boonies and there's no other Black people, like, how do you, right? And you just have kind of the music that you're listening to go off of. How do you workshop your sound in real time when there's nobody to give you feedback? Like, that's such a conundrum that I haven't really thought about.
Yeah, like, what's the benchmark? You know, who are the gatekeepers, which that can be seen as like good or bad, but how do we keep the, I guess like maybe even in your field, correct me if I'm wrong, but how do we keep like the quote unquote, like untalented or bad people from like getting out and shedding like a bad, like light on our profession? Like how, who is the person who's like, this person can make it, this person, no, you need to do something else besides do opera.
Right. Right. That's interesting, for better or for worse. Right. And so like,
yeah,
it also makes me think about like, you know, I talk a lot on this podcast about the way that the modern music industry is so segregated, right? That like Black people have our genres, that it's rap and it's hip hop and it's R&B. And it's jazz, urban. And that's it. And then everything else. And then people, Black people who dare to kind of venture into other genres, the heat is so intense. Like a Lil Nas X, you know, being in the country space, or like a Lizzo who's in the pop space. Now, of course, they get varying critiques depending on their identities. Obviously, Lil Nas X being queer and Lizzo being fat. But like, you know what I mean? Like the heat is so intense for Black people who try to venture out of those genres because it's so ingrained in the music system and the way that we reward artists for kind of sticking to their what we know as Black music, when really, if you're a Black person making music, it's Black music, even if it's in like a standardized art form like opera or something like that. If you're Black and you're making music, like it's Black music. Like but music,
No, legit. It's it is really interesting. It's I don't know. I don't want to say it's kind of like, I guess like bad or good that there aren't gatekeepers, because then you have like a lot of instances where you have young Black kids, which I can't ever really get mad at, to be real. And it's always a cycle that turns on its head all the time. You get people in the 90s saying like, oh, well, when I was younger, when we were rapping, we didn't sound like Common. We didn't sound like Mos Def. Like those aren't real rappers. But now they're like heralded as like some of the best rappers. And people are like, well, Lil Uzi Vert, he's not a real rapper. But you still have like all these young Black kids setting like foundations for their family for years and decades and hundreds of years now, that they'll be able to like live on this money and this influence that puts them in a different stratosphere. So it's like, it is difficult sometimes for me to even be like, do I want hip hop to be like standardized? Do I want somebody to be like, Lil Uzi's not the best of us, so we can't like push him or let him be out here. When I think he's an amazing artist, even if I don't do the type of music that he does or the type of hip hop, branch of hip hop that he engages in. So it's dicey. It really is dicey.
And also it brings to mind, because I did not know that Luke Fiasco was teaching classes. That's dope.
Oh yeah, man,
that is so exciting.
It's so cool.
There is a, I believe he's a musicologist, I don't know if he's musicology or ethnomusicology, but there's a man named A.D. Carson. Are you familiar with that name? So he's at I think it's the University of Virginia. Let me just pause and check, Carson. Don't mind me.
Post it.
Let me just find him. So A.D. Carson, I'm familiar with him because I've seen him in a couple keynotes for conferences that I've been to. So he was at a grad conference. He did the keynote that I was at like 2 years ago, and he did this like rap keynote workshop, and it was really fascinating. You know, he was like, anybody of any race, come and do this workshop where you write a couple bars and then we talk about it. And that was a really, I was only a spectator. I would never. I politely sat in the back of the Zoom.
You didn't open up a can of worms. No, next time we hang out, I'm going to be like, here's a beat. No, here.
Listeners, help. I can't do it. But like, I watched this workshop and it was a really interesting way that he talked about rap, and I saw him at another keynote. He was at the Theorizing African American Music Conference that I performed at this summer. So he was also in a keynote there. What's really interesting about him is he received a PhD at Clemson University, and it's in communication, I think, and information design. And he did like a rap like dissertation, and then also released an album with an academic press as like a publication. And I think he might be the first person to do that.
Yes. And while the name doesn't hit me, I remember coming out of undergrad, and when I was going through communication, like organizational communication, and my professors found out that I did music and that I rapped, they were telling me about that. And it's kind of funny that you said that, because like, especially like the first person to do it, because it was a hot topic around like our communication department.
It is really interesting. He released it through the University of Michigan Press in 2020. So that's recent, right? Like that just happened. And that really makes me think of, again, the ways in which when we talk about like music departments in school and it's the School of Music, we're always talking about white Western art music, right? Like when we're saying music, that's not actually inclusive of all musics, because what musics are really being represented. So the fact that this just happened and he was the first to do it in 2020, right? We're still in this era of so many firsts, being the first Black person to XYZ. Like that is so interesting as far as like, what does it look like to really incorporate like rap and hip hop and R&B into the academy, and to have curriculum centered around it, to have like professors that are particularly doing it. I think now he's at, let me double check. Now he's at, that's right, University of Virginia, and he's an assistant professor of hip hop in the Global South. So what does it look like, right, to get more Black people in particular into those positions is like, this is a hip hop specialist. Like this is someone who has studied it. This is someone who's familiar with all of the repertoire, with all of the names, like, and somebody who can speak to like the theories of rap, the way it's constructed, the way that it works. Everything you're talking about as far as like the flow, the rhyme scheme, like actually give language to those things and knows how to execute them through like really informed pedagogy. Like that is something that we're really missing in the academy.
Yeah, that is. It is, I feel like, a necessary leap to get it standardized.
It's one of those things. It is a tricky thing because it's like, it's so great that we have like this Black art form that exists outside of the academy and isn't like doesn't play by the rules and doesn't have all these, right? So it's like great, but also, it's living in an in-between space kind of.
It really is, because I mean, then you think like, how does adding that curriculum and standards help with like awards, especially since contracts and advances or monies with like hip hop artists, a lot of the time it's tied to like, did you win a Grammy or did you get a Billboard nomination? When they don't even know how to gauge us, because it's really just, did you sell a lot? But then what's the impact or what's the depth of the art? Or even like with the case of being a musician doesn't come with healthcare, doesn't come with benefits. There's no retirement. When you stop, it stops. So like, what does that education even look like? Or is that a possibility to create that for a job or a workforce that is always in high demand in America? But like I said before, at that same time, you do run the risk of losing very influential artists. And I'll find some, even outside of Lil Uzi, somebody like Lil Yachty, you know, or if we're looking at R&B, like Ice JJ Fish. To me, he can't sing a lick, but he's providing for his family. And there is a fan base that genuinely messes with him. So like, it's tough, because at that point, would we be denying him that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of excuse me, my progression as far as getting into the PhD and into the academy, because I feel like nobody really warned me how hard it is to actually be a musician, how hard it is to plan for your future financially and long term. Like, it's such a volatile career trying to do performance in any capacity, but especially when there aren't these kind of pre-described rules and regulations for you, and you really are just kind of like, you don't have formal help, you don't have formal training about not only the music itself, but how to actually work in the industry. So then it's like, what do you do? I can't imagine it. I'm so like born with a silver opera spoon in my mouth. Like, I don't.
You know what I'm saying? You said a silver opera spoon. Look, I mean, but for real, like, you go to be a nurse, you go to be an engineer. They have like, what do you specialize in? Okay. Then at the end of the program, this is how you negotiate your salary. What do you even want to specialize in? Then we could tell you what that salary usually looks like for those people. And this is where you should head. Here's some mentors. Here's an internship. Here's this, that, and the third. And that's just never the case when it comes to music, but then predominantly Black music. It's just always like, you know, like over the top of the covers, like, I mean, it's still working, so we might as well just keep doing this shit, I guess.
Yeah, because it really is like, if you're serious about rap and you really want to do it, where do you go to study? Like, I'm sure there are few music programs in the country with some sort of popular music program where you can study it. But again, are the professors there equipped to help you? Are they Black? Because, like, where are you going to study?
That would be wild if some white dude was teaching hip hop. I don't know.
You know, it's complicated because we have a lot of scholars. I'm not going to name names on this podcast. On the Lord's Day and the Lord's Month, Black History Month. Let me keep my mouth shut. This is a professional podcast. But I know some names of, well, you know, the people, the listeners know. You know, it's a contentious thing in music theory and in musicology, how many white scholars study Black music and what their positionality is in doing that work. I mean, we just have a general lack of Black people in the academy in general, Black people in the music academy specifically. So, like, it's one of those things where it's like, are we just going to let that music go unresearched because we don't have enough Black people to research it? Then white people step in and they research it. But it's a problematic. People go back and forth all the time. Yeah, but that's a really interesting kind of train of thought about, like, rap in the academy and what it's going to look like, and does it ruin the nature of rap and of hip hop to standardize it, right? Like, is its refusal to be contained or defined or boxed in by, like, rigid rules in the same way that white art music is? Isn't that part of what makes it rap? So then it's like, if it was in the academy and if we are going to formally teach it, does it then lose some of its, right, like, original qualities? I don't know.
I think that's a great question, because I mean,
but, like, Black people also deserve to, like, study it in school. Like, we deserve, right, to, like, have experts. We deserve to be able to read research about it. We deserve to be able to, right, to get the same quality of education and training that I can get for playing the viola or I can get for opera, you know?
No, I agree. I really do agree. And to an extent, I feel like it has to be standardized for it to like continue to exist. I really do feel that way. But I will say, at least for hip hop, it's so many branches in terms of, like, the art forms that are born from it. Every time I have, like, these in-depth conversations about hip hop with people, I always use Lil Uzi as a really good example, because even with him, he's like punk rock hip hop, which is a very interesting thing to even, like, conceptualize. Like, how do you even, like, put that together of him being, like, a punk rock artist but doing hip hop at the same time, when none of the, like, vibes or like cadences really ever feel like it. But if you go to his shows, I really couldn't tell the difference if the audio was off. So it is tough, but I do think that it has to be standardized for it to continue to exist or be taken seriously. Because if not, then we like risk the opportunity of labels running off with it and creating their own standardization for it. Like they almost like, well, they did sign that, that virtual rapper for like 2 weeks, and you start getting shit like that born out into the world. And how can we tell them don't do that? It's hip hop. We should be able to do that. Like that's where it gets a little, it gets problematic for me at least. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So by this point, you've established that you're serious about creating this music and it's starting to kind of come in line with like artistic vision. How did it kind of affect like what you saw your future as, kind of like your goals and as far as like, since again, it's kind of like, well, you don't necessarily, it's hard to go to school and be like, oh, I'm gonna major in rap. So how did you see, music kind of fitting into maybe other goals that you had for your future as this was like developing?
Interestingly enough, I mean, I never really did, to be honest. I never saw I mean, we were speaking like very briefly in the beginning of like the grandiose fantasies that like we have, like getting into entertainment and being like, I'm gonna do all of this. But I never really saw the roads. I would always have people tell me like, Darren, you're so talented. You gotta go to LA. You gotta go to New York. I know somebody in Vegas. You should just move there. Like you should go to Atlanta. A lot of Black people do music in Atlanta. You should go down there. So it was always like points of directions from other people, but it never was anything that as a young man, as a young person, I was always like, oh, this validation of this talent, this skill that I hold so dear to me, people are saying that I should go make some money off of it, and, completely fair. So that must be what I want to do. It's gotta be the thing that I want to do. And when I look back on it as a spry 28, that just was never the case for me, even thinking back there. I just loved like rapping, and I loved making music, and I loved making artistic decisions and manifesting something out of thin air that people could enjoy. That really was the biggest thing for me. But I was getting lost in a lot of the either financial responsibilities that people thought that I, that like were like reflecting on me and thought that I should have, or thought that I need to go down that road to obtain. So it was a confusing point, I'd say, especially when I did that first album in undergrad, a very confusing point of, I guess, where I wanted it to go. So,
yeah. So you're thinking kind of longer term, like, I just want to make music that I enjoy, that people enjoy, and it's not necessarily about making this whole big career from it per se, but it's about just making the music.
Yeah. So I mean, it's the love of it. I really do. I feel like God definitely gives us talents. He gives us these gifts to fulfill us, but I don't think every single one comes with like a monetary responsibility. Might be something you're extremely talented at. I when I was an RA at Murray, there was a lot of talented basketball players that came through there outside of Isaiah Cannon, Cameron Payne, and Ja Morant as like the biggest name, who were extremely talented at basketball but didn't end up getting there. you know, that's not everybody's route, or there's not everybody's, not everybody's like, well, yeah, I'll just stop it there. It's not everybody's route, to be honest, but that doesn't take away from the fact that you were given this gift. Like, what does this thing do for you? Mm-hmm. Is it to what, in what capacity does it fulfill you? Is it, because it probably wasn't the fame, you know, but it was the fact that you could get into this gym, like hoop and play this sport that brought you peace. And that doesn't mean you have to step away from it in its totality. That might mean you need to coach. That might mean you need to do ticketing with a basketball team. That might mean that you need to do PR with a basketball team. You might just like really enjoy the thing and not so much like being LeBron James. Right. So, and I really do feel like that's even the case with music, mm-hmm. or even like in my opinion, or like in my opinion of like my musical career, like of me like needing to be the next biggest Kendrick Lamar-ish type person, mm-hmm. or a Drake type person, or Nicki Minaj's type person. It's really just, I find fulfillment in like creating this art of hip hop and doing it through like via my taste, mm-hmm. and how it goes from that way. And if it connects, it connects, and not being so bogged down of like, it connected, but not with enough people. I'm not famous. So it has to, so it's a failure. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a very negative way for like a lot of artists to even like go about like creating this or utilizing this gift, mm-hmm. that was just, that they were born with, that they were bestowed with, to see the world or use their utensils of art in whatever capacity that they're given. If you're really concerned about, and yeah, I won't like be naive. I do understand that musical artists to a degree should have like an ear of, I want this kind of reaction, so I need to do this kind of thing. But at the same time, like, you're going at it from like a motivation of like, I want to make this art. I'm not too concerned about the masses being like, oh, this is valid. You are an actual artist. Mm. You can keep doing this. Like, that's a poison pill.
That's such a great point about just like, how can you feel validated in your own right to do art and to call yourself an artist, even if no one else formally calls you that, right? And yeah. And even divorcing, right, your art and your passions and your hobbies from capitalism, from like, mm-hmm. everything that I do has to make me money. Everything has to be a side hustle. Everything has to be, and that's how I'm, you know, viewing my success, is how much money does it make me? So listeners, get a hobby, get a passion. Okay. That's just for you. that nobody has to see, or unless you, exactly. Unless you want them to, and it could be something that you feel invested in. You know, I think capitalism really spoils our relationship to work, obviously. But not all work has to make you money, mm-hmm. and yeah. there's work that's really worthwhile that doesn't make you money. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it, for sure.
Exactly. No. I firmly believe that. And it's not something that I had always believed. And for a while, it was something that I thought was a cop out. Mm. That I started to have that thought in my head of, oh, maybe I'm thinking this because it's just too hard. But no, I genuinely do feel, even in, I mean, I, you know, we hear like, or see like interviews with artists where they always talk about like that, you know, that first moment of like validation, and, you know, not to like quote people like we know them, but I think it is like a very, like a common thread of like being in that space of, being like little, like not known by like a lot of mass people of like, hey, who is that on the radio? And then have that spark of that spark of like a new person hearing your song. Like, I think that is something that we live in a lot. And I remember hearing Drake talk about that too, of like, that's a moment that he'll never get again. Even though he's extremely famous, he'll never get that discovery moment. Like, he holds on to that. At least from how he presented it in his interview on Rap Radar, he holds that like one of the dearest things, and tells like artists all the time, like, don't let go of that. But why is that so dear to him rather than like, oh yeah, when I made my first 100 million or had 100,000 fans come to my show, that was the thing that really like sparked or like or staked my validation for myself that I was an artist, instead of like me having 5 people listen to my music rather than 50,000. So it is a value thing, and that's going to be different for other people. And that isn't wrong at all, but it really does come down to, for that art, is it just the art that validates you? And if it's not, it's okay. But what's the thing that's going to hold value to you and bring you peace in your life? And for me, it really is just my ability to do it and my ability to comb through my life and comb through my worldviews and put them in a form that is digestible to other people, but also like helps me get this stuff off and out of my head. So.
On to talk about the Dope or Nope show. Now,
yeah.
I had seen this on your Instagram story every once in a while, and I was like, huh, I wonder what that is. Okay, Dope or Nope, sure, I don't know. And then sometime last month, I was actually able to catch one, and I was like, wait, this is fascinating. It was so interesting and fun and enjoyable and informative. So please enlighten the listeners about the Dope or Nope show.
Yes. The Dope or Nope show started in, man, that's so crazy to think that we are like, this is like the third year, headed into like the fourth year of us doing this. But it definitely started out of the pandemic, of us, me and my friends as artists, Will and his wife, Kamaria, and stage name Seekram Lamaj and Abeja Theatra. We went to school together, did a lot of music together. They're extremely talented people, extremely talented.
I will link them. I will link them in the show notes, yes. Listeners.
Yes. Extremely talented, classically trained, musically trained. Abeja's actually, she does opera as well.
Oh, tell her to get on the mic. Tell her to get on the show. Tell her I'm waiting.
Look, to be honest, look, if you want another guest for February, let me know. I actually think that would be really interesting to see y'all correspond, especially since y'all have depth and knowledge of music.
Okay.
She's deep in it. Her and her husband are, but yeah, that really started as like a need to create, because we weren't able to like get together and do it. So we were trying to find something that we could do ourselves to like stay inspired, hear new music, hear new sounds, things outside of our norm, since a lot of us were siloed during the pandemic, and also give like a platform to artists, small time artists. We have had like some, I guess, relatively like big artists on there prior, but to give like small time artists like some airtime and a space for new people to hear their music, grow their fan base, and also be able to collaborate with artists that they have, no idea about, that they might be able to work together and make some new art outside of it. So And then it's also like fun sometimes telling people that I think they suck. So yeah, it's a pretty, it's been a pretty fun journey of doing like the Dope or Dope show. But yeah, 3 years running, 4 years running. It's very interesting.
Yes. Wow.
I had hair back then. That's tough.
Wow. Remember when we had hair? Those were the days.
Right, you got hair. Decide to cut. But yeah, it's different. Don't, you can't emphasize. Don't emphasize.
Listen, listeners, we love being bald. We do. Okay. So the Dope or Nope show, you do it on Instagram. There's an official account, right?
It's Dope or Nope Show. So it'll be the @DopeOrNopeShow on Instagram. And we predominantly do it. We do it on there every Tuesday. I get the time zones wrong, but it's either like 8 or 9 o'clock, depending on where you're at. And then we'll do like album reviews for artists who like are wanting us to do more in-depth like talks. But, you know, we hold those on the Dope or Nope YouTube page. But yeah, that's where we particularly, you know, get down and get busy is on IG.
Yeah. So this was so interesting to me to watch, and I'm so glad that I could catch it because, you know, speaking to our earlier point as far as like when you are kind of siloed in what you do and you don't have physical community around you to help, you know, workshop what you're working on, to get feedback, you know, to grow as an artist, who do you go to, you know, to get that feedback and to receive that growth? And so like, this is such a cool medium and way, not only to just like meet other artists and other people that you might want to collaborate with or whatever, just to like be involved in your industry in a proactive way, but also, you know, to start a conversation around the art and the music that's developing now, like the new techniques and things that people are utilizing in their work. And then like, you know, just having a conversation about the development of that sound. And so like, I just think it's so cool. You know, it's such a practical way that you're creating like this community around hip hop. And, you know, I think a lot, especially, you know, I talk a lot about my experience as a Black woman in music on this show and Black womanhood on the show. You know, so it really brought to mind as far as like what the things that Black men and masculine people can gather around, you know, and, you know, this is a result of not to get all political, LOL, not the show isn't political.
Get on the soapbox.
LOL. Because I've been talking about misogyny, so I don't know why I'm suddenly like, not to get political, LOL. Okay. No, I'd be ranting about. But I, you know, as far as like what men have to gather around and what men build community around, you know, there's few and far between ways that men are healthily allowed to express themselves and healthily allowed to participate in communion with each other. And so I think that this is also such a really interesting space for men in particular who are occupying this hip hop and rap space, who are experimenting with their own sound, their own creativity and artistry, but then also get to do that in fellowship with other men, which I find really fascinating.
No, that is really fascinating. 'Cause I mean, that's completely true. I was listening to See the Thing Is podcast, which is a Black woman led podcast. And they were talking about one time how they feel like a lot of times with men, like the absence of intimacy or like the nuances of intimacy or we don't have, or like we can never establish with other men. Which is why a lot of times we're like emotionally dense when it comes to expressing ourselves. So but that's an interesting aspect that you even bring up. It made me think a little bit more in depth of even men in artistic spaces, where to be an artist, I feel like you have to be extremely vulnerable. And that's the only way that art can communicate effectively if it's done through emotion. And for like people to put together something like that, a song, a form of audio content, and then present it to people to be judged on our show or even outside of our show, is very intimate. It's extremely intimate, and that just sparked a lot of thoughts in my head about how men can navigate that space, navigate that space outside of just I'd say person to person, but through art or through like a medium. So yeah, no, that's really interesting. I know I probably didn't like answer your
No,
question
it's
just
fine.
because that
I made an
made me think.
observation.
Yeah, okay, okay. Observation. That but that did make me think a lot of about like the emotional currency that I pour into my art, and that other men do that as well. But on the flip side, it's so taboo for any of these hyper masculine men in these spaces to say like, oh, I'm this or I'm that, or I'm this thug ass nigga and can't nobody ever get close to me, and I'm gonna do this, that, and a third. But a lot of times, especially when they provide depth in their reasonings of their songs, you could even say somebody like 21, oh, or even like 50 Cent, who is like, I think people would say is a very a manly man, toxic masculinity, all these kinds of things. And deservingly so, he fits a lot of those spaces. Nor do I think that he would apologize or discount that. But even in his music, he's talked about like a lot of the hardships or losses that he's had from being in the street. And that is extremely vulnerable to even say like, yeah, I was selling drugs and my friend died right in front of me, and it turned me into this hardened animal. Like that's tough to even recognize and say to somebody. Like that's very intimate to even get that message across to people. But nice observation. I'm gonna take some more thought on that. That's really, I like that observation. That was nice.
Yeah, she's a scholar, I suppose.
Look, you like that doctoral. That's yeah, you need to be over there.
But yeah, no, that's such a great point. And it's also bringing to mind, right? Yeah, the particular way that you, as the host of that show, have to, hold delicately when people are bringing their music to you and their art to you, and they're entrusting you to provide helpful feedback. And even when I was watching that show, there was never a moment, right, where you're just roasting like maliciously someone's
Oh,
art. It
yeah.
was always like, hey, even if it was a nope, it was like, hey, thanks for bringing it in. Here's what I think you could work on. Here's where it could go. There's definitely potential. Like, keep working on it. And
Yeah.
it could be something that's really special and worthwhile.
Yeah. No, I do think that is one of the things that I love about the show, especially since we do free reviews, because I definitely have been in spaces where people are like, yeah, pay to get your stuff on, on air and da, 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 and then we'll review it. And while I'm not necessarily saying all of those shows are tainted, I think it's tough for at least how I perceive it, or how most artists would perceive the authenticity of that feedback. And also a lot of times with those shows, they don't give like depth, and they're just like, oh, I like this song, or I don't like this song, and they just go on to the next one, and then you're 15 or 20 or 50 or 100 or $150. So it's I will say that we do handle a lot of things with care in terms of the feedback that we give, because but I will be very honest. I have roasted people, and Will's definitely roasted people, and Abasia has lightly roasted people. Will's the worst out of us. I'll be very honest. He's very Simon Cowell. That's the our community has
Okay.
given. And yeah, it's definitely given him that
So
name.
you're the Paula
But with
Abdul, or are you the Randy
I'll
Jackson?
take Randy, and I'll give Abasia
Sounds
Paula.
tight,
But I think
dog.
we can.
Yeah.
I think we can. No, all the other definitely. Yeah, that's me. Definitely, that's me. But even in those, I'll say even in those times where I feel like we have like roasted people, it is out of like, I mean, it's tough to say like out of good spirit, but because I mean, I'm pretty sure those individuals don't see it that way. But what I will say is like, we never stop at that. Like, it's always like, these are the reasons I had an issue with your record. These are the things I feel like you could have done better. These are the things that I feel like you're lacking in. These are the things that I feel like you could change. And I've told people like mad times, like on that show, because we have had some people that were like upset at like how we reviewed their music. But I've told people mad times, like at the end of the day, like this one, we're giving you like critiques. And if you think they're valid enough, well, I mean, one, you came to the show for a reason, but two, like if you think they're valid enough, try to incorporate them. Or if you don't think we know what the fuck we're talking about, use it as fuel. And regardless, like if we say, yo, I don't think that you, and I feel like on that show, I've probably told maybe four people, like, I do not think that you should be doing music. Like, I feel like you should do something else. I could be wrong. I could be 100% wrong. And I've told people that a lot of times. Like, I have confidence enough in what I feel like is like good, because I can differentiate between my personal likes with music and what sonically sounds good. Like I don't like country music, but I could tell you like, yes, sonically this sounds good. Like I can break it down at least from a fan's perspective of like, this, your lyrics don't sound clear. The beat is unmastered. Like there's a lot of things clashing with this. Your subject matter is off. Like you're talking about this in the first verse and it doesn't connect with any of the messaging in the chorus. It's very random. Like, and that's been a lot of like our harsh critiques on people, or like when I've asked Will to like cut the song off like midway through, because it's just like, it's like, man, like you, like this is all over the place. And like it's not good, but I will give you that. I won't just say like, cut it off. I don't want to hear the shit. Let's go to the next record. I'll sit down and still tell you like, these are the reasons why I cut your song. These are the reasons why I disliked it, why I gave it a note. So yeah, I would at least like to get that out, that yes, we have lightly singed, roasted, but because I don't want this to come out and somebody be like, well, there's a, because we definitely have made clips of it. And then like Gary was on one, or Will was on
all one. All the haters are listening to this podcast right, you know, now. So, hey, y'all, so can I keep just, hating, okay?
Right, because I'm gonna be real, your song was still bad. But you know what you do, what you do outside of that is up to you. It kind of relates back to the route that one thinks that they have to take. Of doing an art or like doing a passion. I mean, you don't always, just because you love hip hop, mean you have to rap. Maybe you love hip hop, but you're not good at rapping or whatever it is, but you still love this thing. It's a passion. Open a record store, become a curator, become a agent, become a sequencer of music. Like that doesn't mean like you don't have any value in this thing, but it might just be this one route that you were like, oh, I love hip hop so much. It's a passion for me. I gotta rap. Like that's just the thing. The unstandardized mess of this art. It always looks like one road, but there's a lot of different ways for you to find value and validate yourself, like being a part of this world. But yeah, and even to think of like the folks that I have like given those positive reviews to, or even like the notes that I've like been like, yeah, like I didn't like these things, but man, you have potential. This looks like it could live in like a certain space or sector of music. Of maybe it's not on the radio, but have you tried like sequencing or like selling this for sequencing in a TV show? I can hear this on Insecure. You know, it might not be a radio record, but it does have life somewhere. So we always try to like find those avenues, and it's always thorough, and we're never like being fake with folks. Which is why I'm glad that we do those free reviews like on IG in real time, so we can give those like very like raw and like thoughtful like responses to people, especially when they're sharing their art with us. So yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anything else you want to mention about the show?
So for the show, you will be listening to this after we return, but we are going to be returning for our third, going on fourth year with the show. We took a break coming into the new year, but we will be returning February 7th will be our first Tom coming back for this new season. We have a new judge on there. He was here for this past season. His name is Darian Matthews, weirdly enough, two Darians on the show. He was extremely talented, a trained trumpet player. He also knows how to play multiple instruments as well. Went to school for music. And yeah, man, we're gonna be back on February 7th, every Tuesday, 7 to 8, give or take. But you can always look at the at our Instagram, Dope or Nope Show on IG, and come join us, fall in love with some new music and sounds, and be a part of the community, and like invite people in. You know what I'm saying? Like, send some music in yourself. You know, if you know of a friend who could use that exposure, and invite them on and bring them in. Cause while, it's always up in the air what our judgment will be, that's just our opinions. And there's gonna be a lot of other people in that space that might think differently or might wanna collab with you or might wanna engage in your art in a different way to add value or even be that additional ear that you might want in your camp. So yeah, come and hang with us. We pretty cool people. Is this thing on?
Mom, if you were gonna skip any record, I think it might be this one that you wanna, but maybe not. I will talk about it later. I really don't care.
If I could, I would have them all. Like, give me 3 wishes, save 2 for later, just give me Agrabah. On second thought, just save 1, do away with bras, cause I'm for the cause. Free your mom.
So, let's finish with talking about, just a bit about your music and your own kind of process as far as making music. So, when you're starting, when you're thinking about starting a new song or new project or whatever, what tends to come first? You tend to kind of look for beats and do some freestyling over that. Do you tend to focus on the lyrics first? Do you tend to run with the theme?
I think the beat has to come first. I really do feel like that and especially with hip hop. I think the beat always has to come first. Hip hop at its core is an intelligent movement. It's hip to be intelligent, and then the hop's the movement part. But the hop is what moves the intelligence of the art. So you have to start with the beat, because that's going to get people moving to even get interested into what you're saying. So I really, really like preach that to people whenever they're asking me for advice on how I make songs. I think it always starts with the beat. That's not saying I've never like had a theme or a mindset of like the kind of record that I want to make and then go find a beat to match it. But even with that, I went to go find the beat to match the feeling. And then after I do that, then yeah, it's definitely a lot of like freestyling. More so scatting, to be honest, of like finding those cadences and flows that I want to use to keep people interested into the theme of the song. And then putting in like the lyrics and like the meat of the actual like record that I'm trying to make or the point that I want to get across. That's usually my process for writing. Writing records, creating records.
Okay, and so as far as the production, do you work on all of that yourself? Do you have people that you collaborate with and stuff like that?
Yes, I do have people that I collaborate with. My engineer, Virgil, we met during undergrad, but I didn't really start getting my like music mixed. For a while, I did it all myself, to be honest, outside of the beats. Even I used to make beats. I do it all myself. And then like when I made Lit Day of Darian DeRoe, I recorded it all myself. I mixed it all myself. There were a couple records on there that I outsourced if I felt like I couldn't get the sound right, then I would go to like my partners who were a little bit more seasoned in engineering. The beats definitely became a thing that I would have to collaborate just because I didn't have the attention span. I'm trying to get better at that now, but the attention span to like sit down and create those. I used to do it, but I ran out of that want to do it. But now, yeah, it's definitely become more of a collaboration in how I put records together, from forming those relationships with producers to now having that relationship with Virgil, for him like mixing things for me and him mixing things for me and knowing like my vision for songs, but also me trusting him with his expertise and his vision for what he thinks will be dope or cool with my records, which that was like pulling teeth with me for a long time. And I appreciate him a lot for sticking with me, because I'd send him pages of notes like, I don't like this. Why did you do this? Da 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 da. Before it took me a while to be like, well, he's good at what he does. Like, I gotta be able to let go in some aspect to see how he can add dimension to my records, and add that dimension to like help it live in like different spaces or for different people outside of just my ear, people who like my ear, because you know that gives the art like a different way for people to look at it, even if it is adding to my lyrics by how he presents it on that record. So but outside of that, even going to like music videos and things, I do think that art should be a collaborative aspect. Mm-hmm. It's cool if you can do it all on your own, but I think it travels a lot better if you do have people on those journeys to like help put these things together, together. So yeah.
I totally agree that like, you know, you can do so much more if you have multiple people, you know, working with you on the same project. If you're trying to, or if you have an ego about, oh, I want to do it all myself, or I can see how it can be perhaps hard, again, with that vulnerability of your music, to, you know, invite other people into the process, mm-hmm. and let other people see it and work on it with it, on it with you, mm-hmm. and offer feedback and all that stuff. But, you know, I think it can be really limiting if you're just holding on to it yourself. Like, no, I'm the only one that can kind of touch it. And it's like
that burnout, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. That burn, because I think up until, I mean, the pandemic put a lot of years on people. That's evident. But I think up until I made Lit Day, I was like releasing mixtapes back to back to back to back. But I didn't necessarily always engineer and like sequence everything myself. That's cap. I usually sequence things myself. But a lot of times I will ask for advice here and there. But with Lit Day, I did all of that myself. Every single thing myself. Mm. And then the next project I dropped was Misfit. I didn't want to listen to Lit Day. And when I released it, a lot of people they loved it and were giving me great feedback, sharing it with their friends. But man, I heard one record on there. If anybody played it for me in their car, I was like, please turn this shit off. I don't want to hear this. I'm glad you like it, but I do not want to hear this.
Listen, the listeners know the early episodes of this podcast, the audio has been a journey. Okay, so listeners, I need an editor. Girl, if you're listening to this and you're like, I gotta help Lydia out and get this raggedy podcast off the ground, email me hermusicacademia@gmail.com because I need some help. Anyway, so I feel that as far as like looking back at your earlier stuff and you're like, oh, y'all were letting me out the house like that? Okay.
Yeah, no, legit, man, for real. Yeah, so yeah, it's a process. But a collaboration, I think, makes art. It makes it better, it gives it a lot more depth, which is important for like the absorption of it.
So put your number on this paper. I see you later, alligator. Like on my feet, I'm talking water, baby. Girls all over the floor. Like we should catch a vibe. Hop on my back pairs, let's take a ride.
Okay, I might cut this out because this is a big question, but I want to know, as far as we kind of touched on it earlier in our conversation about the Dope or Nope show and how communities kind of develop around rap and hip hop, particularly Black men. You know, I'm really interested in kind of when I was re-listening to Misfit, as far as like the general themes of the album, there's a lot of talk about like goals and dreams, working towards something greater, a lot of faith kind of coming up in your music, also some stuff about, you know, social justice, the Black experience, that all felt really heavy. What was interesting to me is I didn't really feel like, and this is not really the same for what I, you know, my experiences listening to rap and hip hop, is there was kind of a lack of talking about women on your album, which I thought was really interesting, and mm-hmm. just like a choice that I'm interested in hearing your take about. You know, now, you know, there's what is it, girls that's on there.
Yeah.
So there certainly it's not like you're avoiding the topic or anything like that, but going back to your earlier point about like 50 Cent and like misogyny kind of being this like characteristic staple of a lot of big names in hip-hop and rap, is the way that they talk about women, and that goes, you know, to my earlier point about the limited range of emotions that men are safely allowed to share, the biggest one being anger, right, and violence, and that often being perpetuated in language against women. So I'm really interested in kind of, again, this is not a question that you have to answer if you don't feel comfortable. I'll just cut it.
No. I want you to be tough with me. Don't do that. Come on, girl. Bring it here. Come on, let's do it.
I'm not trying to, well, you know, I'm not trying to be like, tell me about your relationship with women or anything like that. Just like.
Let's get into it. I'm here for the content. Let's do it.
Okay, I'm probably going to cut this, but I'm just thinking about.
Oh, especially if you might cut it, then go all out.
Okay, now we're just talking. I'm interested in that choice and how you kind of reconcile maybe the relationship of rap and hip hop and, you know, the tropes and the stereotypes of rap and hip hop as being misogynistic and using this violent and harmful language against women, and how you're kind of situating yourself in this space, knowing that to be true a lot, you know, about a lot of the big names, that that's kind of characteristic of the genre. And how do you relate to that as far as making your own music and the type of message that you're trying to express about women? Again, you don't have to dish any details about you and women. I'm just
no. I think it's important for me to, because I have had a lot of let me see. I want to make sure I
know this is a tricky question. I'm already regretting it, but I do want to know your answer.
I like it. I like it. I like the question. I'll start it like this. So I'd even say for girls, on Misfit, I really liked putting that song together. When we were talking, I'm gonna make my way around to the question, I promise. This is just gonna help me walk. When we were talking about like composition of like what I start with, I think that was, that record right there was more so, I started with the theme of my relationship with women and being like sexually intimate with them and what that meant for me as a man, and me like putting that song together and how I would present my ideas for my sons or my daughters whenever I have them, and my advice or pitfalls or traps or things to be aware of whenever you're engaging in this, regardless if you're, you know, if I have a son and he ends up being gay, or if I have a daughter and she ends up being gay, or if they're both heterosexual, like, I think that there are certain things that you should be careful of if you're engaging with people intimately and making sure that you're, there's a lot of times that you can engage intimately with people and it not always be about like continuing their relationship, or it might be about like you fulfilling some type of feeling in yourself. And I really like putting that song together because I was able to look very in depthly of like my relationship with like sex and being intimate with women, and how like just as a human, and then definitely as a heterosexual man, how I've like use sex to feel certain things or like fill up gaps in my life and things like that. So, but I say all that because I don't think that I ever would have been able to, this is me walking around to the answer to your question. I don't think I ever would have been able to make a song like that or look that in depthly of my behaviors if I didn't have so many strong relationships with the women in my life. Which I think also makes me I won't even say it's something that I consciously do all the time, but that does influence like how I bring up my subject matters or how I talk about women in my records, because of the people that I have in my life and the women that I have in my life that are like artists or even outside of being musicians. Like, I don't think that as I've grown, I definitely have done it in the past when I was like mimicking artists, especially with like 50 Cent and like Ludacris. I spoke about him and a lot of like male rappers a lot of times do have that aggressive tone misogynistic tone when they're talking about women. I do feel like a lot of the times it's like caricatures of how they actually would behave, not giving them an out to say like they don't engage in those behaviors, because I don't know them niggas and I don't know what they be doing. But at the same time, like, I do feel like the older I got and the more ownership I found in my own artistry, instead of like mimicking and trying to finding my sound through artists that I loved or was a fan of their music, my relationships with women really made me expound just outside of like what their bodies can do for me, or what their sexuality can do for me. So I think that's really where it comes from. It really isn't even like a conscious effort to do it. It definitely is like a conscious effort in the language that I pick when I'm writing records. And I remember the first time my mom heard me say bitch, I was like, that was a long but even in that regard, like, I do feel like there is conversations that I've had with women in my life that they prefer their music to sound like that. And then I have women in my life that they prefer it not. And they'll both explain to me why. So it is also, it's always like very, I think, like a nuanced approach I try to step to a record, especially when it's like either centered around my relationship with women or being intimate with women, or even being flashy with women. I definitely try to approach it from both of those angles because, I think it really is just about like the influences I've had, like being around women and having those in-depth talks. Because to be real, when we speak about being vulnerable and like the lack of that being in male spaces, I love having conversations like these of vulnerability or like emotions. But I rarely ever have these with my male friends, more so now, right? But I rarely have these with my male friends, and I really enjoy having these conversations, but I have these conversations with women majority of the time, because y'all
we be have talking.
y'all do be talking, and y'all have that emotional depth and surgical precision and understanding of why I'm presenting myself a certain way, or I'm presenting an emotion a certain way, or even for y'all and how y'all are doing it. I do feel like it's just been like a bleed over into my art the more I've been able to like cultivate these close relationships with women. So
and that is going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Thank you so much to Darian for being on the show. It is always so great to catch up with him, to learn alongside him. I'm so thankful that he's a part of my community and that I'm connected to his amazing music. Make sure you search 94 Dro wherever you stream your music. All the links to his work will be in the show notes. If you have any questions, comments, feedback for me about the show, if you want to suggest a topic for the show, or you want to come on the show yourself, girl, get on the mic! Send me an email at hermusicacademia@gmail.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Do I need to let you start again? I'm sorry. Okay. I'll behave. I don't know how to behave on these things, but I'll do my best.
I mean, it's a casual podcast, but it's a professional persona. So I'm like, how much can I say? Okay. No, it's okay. Fine. I'll keep it some of it.
Okay.